Welcome to WRHU's One-on-One Stories. For the next 30 minutes, our host, Dr. Gregory Barroza, will talk with influential and inspirational guests. One-on-One Stories explores all areas of life and lifestyles affected by health, fitness, nutrition, medicine, mental attitude, and general well-being. Our guests discussed unique aspects of their lives and work, including current, controversial, and offbeat subjects of interest to all of us. It's One-on-One Stories with Dr. Gregory Barroza.
Maybe your knees don't seem to work like they used to. Maybe you're over 50 or an ardent athlete who wreaked havoc on your once youthful and agile knees. Or maybe you're a bit overweight and are having difficulty getting up and down due to discomfort when bending your knees. Well, you are not alone. What was once considered a final heroic surgery has now become more routine and more commonplace. Today we will be talking to an experienced physical therapist about her experiences rehabbing many patients that have had total knee replacements. You're listening to One-on-One Stories with Dr. Gregory Barroza.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ear. I got a bad case of loving you.
We want to welcome today's guest, Rachel Meyer, a licensed physical therapist with 34 years of clinical practice. She's done all sorts of rehab and sports medicine. Today's topic is going to be total knee replacements, which will be representative of joints in general, but we're going to try to concentrate more on the knee than anything. Rachel's been working in the Huntington, Long Island, New York area for years, very well respected, has quite a following, and turns out some very good results. So welcome to the program, Rachel.
Thank you very much, Greg.
How common are total knee replacements in today's world so that the public gets an idea of what we're even talking about? If they've never really been involved in sports or been around people that are aging, they probably say, well, how common is this? I don't even know about it. But how common is it today?
Total knee replacement is extremely common. A lot of people probably know someone who has a knee replacement if they don't have any experience on their own or in their family. Knee replacements are present in probably 7 million people in the United States at this time. The last statistic, I think, came out about 2014. I believe there are about 600,000 such surgeries per year in the United States at this time.
That's a very significant number. I know there's a lot of companies involved with all sorts of types of medication and types of surgery to help people with these advancing aging knees. What age groups are we talking about in general that you might see? Do you see this in youngsters? Do you see it in middle-aged people? Do you see it in high school and college athletes? Or do you see it in the aging people? What age group do you usually see that comes to you and talks to you about their knees bothering you and considering having a knee replacement?
Knee replacement in general is in the older adult category, usually at least in their 70s most of the time, but we still do see some people in their 50s who require a knee replacement because they've run out of options in terms of maintaining function and controlling their pain. It usually is someone who has a prior trauma or a different type of arthritic condition other than simple wear and tear who has it in the younger age group. So somebody with rheumatism, rheumatoid arthritis, or some other types of connective tissue disorders might need it younger than someone who has osteoarthritis from the process of aging.
Just so our audience understands, osteoarthritis, or just a slow, debilitating arthritic condition of any joint, but primarily here we're talking about knees, this is a natural sequela just to the aging process. Unfortunately, we get these osteophytes, and what osteophytes are is little protrusions of bone in areas we don't want them that makes the joint surface not as smooth as it used to be. And we see them just from the natural wear and tear of our aging process.
We see loss of cartilage. The cartilage gets thinner and thinner, and at the point where it erodes down to the bone, usually people have a degree of pain that's not really manageable without some strong intervention. And at that point, it starts to interfere with their function.
Just to throw it in for anyone in the audience that's not totally knowledgeable about this area, cartilage itself is the articular surface of these bones within the joint, and they provide not only a gliding action for the joint, but they also have a slight cushion capability. And so with all that, that is what allows us to move. They also, there is lubrication, and that's produced from the joint capsule itself, which produces the fluids that lubricate. And those factors allow us to actually have gliding joints, and that's what we're born with in theory if everything is normal. The aging process catches us whether we want to be caught or not. And the question that I pose to you is, in athletes, are they more prone to wear these joints out sooner? And is that the population you start seeing in the 50s?
There's some question about whether they're wearing their joints out sooner, but some are for sure, and particularly those who have a lot of impact. The long distance running can, in some cases, accelerate the process, but there are other factors as well. One of the most commonly recognized factors is, at this point, weight. Carrying extra weight on your body is one of the surest ways to damage your joints.
Also, when we get into it, it's going to be one of the best things we can do when it becomes time to either get a replacement or think about how do I battle against this ongoing arthritis. Another important point for people to understand is that the joint cartilage itself doesn't have any nerve endings. While your joint cartilage is wearing out and it's still fairly thick, that's really not causing you the pain. The pain comes from what we call subchondral bone, the bone underneath the cartilage. Your point is that once you wear this cartilage out or it starts to thin out, it's much more easy to bruise the bone underneath. And when you're bone on bone, you're right on those nerve fibers. It's like having an exposed nerve in one of your teeth or something.
That's true. It becomes very, very painful. And what we look to do is to prevent the rest of the body from having to be restricted due to that small area where the aging process has accelerated more so than the rest of the body. So that that person then can only be as active as that one joint can tolerate, and then other systems start to deteriorate. So that's the general theory behind why someone should choose to have a joint replacement.
So it's not only pain control, you're saying, it's also form and function and all
exactly.
The things to get around, have as close to, when I say a normal life, as we possibly can achieve. I also had the great privilege many years ago studying with a fellow for a month, Dr. Joe Torg. He was then at the University of Pennsylvania, and then he moved to Temple, where they named the sports medicine facility after him, and he's, I'm sure, well retired by now. But he used to say the biggest boon to his sports medicine practice, with all these athletes waiting in line, was the fact that everyone started jogging to get their cardiovascular in shape, and they didn't realize in so doing, many of them that were out doing miles and miles and miles were wearing the cartilage out in their knees. That's one man's perspective on it. But I do think that the trauma of jogging and weight, like you said, and the squats and things like this can be cumulative.
Well, it can be cumulative. But again, there are other factors. And you wouldn't want to say that if you run, you're going to end up with a joint replacement.
Correct.
That's totally pushing the pendulum the other way. And I think in a dangerous way. You shouldn't just say, oh, don't run. But the fitness level and the activity level need to have some correlation.
I think we're both leaning in the same direction here, just looking at it from a different perspective, because the good news is over the years, some of our techniques for staying fit and the exercise equipment and things like that have advanced along with time. And so some of the equipment you might put a patient on would have less of the concussive pressure and still yet get the knee action, get the cardiovascular going. So everything's a balance. If you can minimize the number of hours literally pounding your knees and yet still get the same motion and activity, I think you would say that's probably the preferable way.
Probably. I just feel that it's important to realize that although sports can be a factor, the rate of joint replacement is much higher than the rate of people who do distance running. We have more people getting joint replacements than people who used to run marathons.
And you're saying that portion is, you believe, responsible for the fact that it's probably an older population, too, that they've already...
It's an older population, yeah. And it also may be historically a less fit population. We are seeing joint replacements in people who are heavy exercisers, people who've played a lot of tennis or a lot of golf or a lot of all sorts of sports. But we haven't really gotten to the point where we can only point the finger at one activity.
Just like some of the other areas of medicine, cosmetic surgery, which is in vogue and more of it now than ever, is our aging population considering knee replacement surgery when needed as just one more factor for trying to have a more youthful life return to them than they maybe wouldn't have chosen 10 or 20 years ago?
That's an interesting point. I think there are a number of people who have joint replacements whose main goal is to continue their sport. People who want to continue to ski, horseback ride, play tennis, And some go in with that goal and don't achieve it, but there are certainly many, many who do. And realistically, they return to their sport and they maintain their sense of self by doing so. And their sense of well-being and their sense of fitness and happiness can be returned because that pain is diminished and they're able to go back and do what they always did.
Is there an optimal age for a person to consider having a total knee replacement? Should we be waiting to a certain age that's calculated based on a lifetime before the implant itself wears out and might be needed to be replaced again? We know that these implants don't last forever. Is there a certain age where, years ago, they'd say wait until you're in your 60s to think about this because then they'll last for about 20 years and then you may get some more time out of it. Are you seeing that being a factor today, or what's your knowledge about how long these implants last?
Not being a surgeon, I can't say that I do specifically advise people on that. From a functional standpoint, I think that we're seeing people have knee replacements younger if they need them, because there are ways to either replace them later on or use an implant that has a better lifespan. And the important thing is, can that person function in the time frame that they're in? In other words, if their pain or their lack of function is creating a disability and they're in their 50s, then why should they have a disability until they're 70 just to wait for an implant? It doesn't make any sense. It's much more important to have them function in the present. And you also have people who, if they wait too long, their level of wellness will deteriorate because of lack of activity. So at that point, you really haven't benefited by waiting.
Also, I'll throw another factor in there, and that's if you have a bad joint, let's say you have a bad right arthritic knee, you're probably going to ambulate a little bit unusually, not a normal way to do it, to compensate for the pain, discomfort, and maybe change or lack of range of motion. And in so doing, you may affect your upper hip or you may affect one of the joints on the opposite leg. Is that fair analysis?
Sure. You're going to see muscle atrophy. You're going to see loss of range of motion in the area of the joint that's painful. And you're going to push extra stress onto the rest of the body. So again, there's not a lot to be gained by prolonging the wait at a certain point when you're starting to adapt and starting to alter the way that you move and alter the activities that you participate in. You're already starting to see things that you would rather not happen start to happen.
Fair point. What are the life expectancies of these implants? Do you have any range or ballpark or not really?
Not so much. I know that when the surgeons have the conversations with patients regarding putting them in, they give an estimate of a lifespan for these prostheses. It's not something that I really deal with that much. I see them when they're new, when the patients first get them, so it's not something I think about a lot. But I think most of them will last 15, 20 years at a minimum.
And especially the older population, I think a lot of this is dependent upon what your expectancy is, what your athletic use is.
What you want to do with it.
Return to downhill skiing, well, that's a different story than if you just want to take a walk in the evenings and things
right.
like that.
Again, the knees hold up very, very well as far as wear and tear, although it is not encouraged to run on them. I think there are some joints that we've seen some problems with, more so in the hip, where there have been some of the manufacturing techniques that turned out to be not as good as they expected them to be, and people have had some problems with them. But in the long range, the vast majority of them hold up very well. And you see people come in who have fallen and they think there might be a problem with their prosthesis or something like that, and usually they're okay.
I'd like to remind our show friends that you are listening to One-on-One Stories with your host, Dr. Gregory Barroza. Our guest today is Rachel Meyer, a certified and very skilled physical therapist. We are discussing her perspectives on the need for and rehabilitation following total knee replacement. Neither one of us is here to second guess any orthopedic surgeons or sports medicine doctors, but the medical world is having a little bit of a rethink as far as, are we doing right by these patients with various and assorted methods of medication, either injection or otherwise, and or even arthroscopic surgery to clean up some of these damaged joints. And again, I'm not here to say that we don't need arthroscopic surgery for these damaged joints. I think that's a tremendous advance that we have. But are some people overusing that with the inevitability that the only thing that's going to stop the pain is a total knee replacement?
They've come up with some pretty strong evidence in the research in the last few years to indicate that there is no advantage to doing arthroscopy in the presence of advanced arthritis. So to try to clean up a joint with a degenerative tear of the meniscus, the cartilage that's in between the two ends of the knee joint, rather than the articular cartilage, which is the covering on the ends of the bones. Once the end's cartilage has eroded to the degree that the source of pain or where you see a lot of bone on bone, the evidence is strong that those arthroscopies do not delay the need for a joint replacement. So they're kind of coming to the point where there's less and less of that.
So do you see patients who come to you for therapy and then they say, I've got an opinion that I need an arthroscopy, and then you have to explain to them, but if you're bone on bone at this point, maybe you need to get a second opinion to see if that's the best choice for you, or is it inevitable that you'll go through all this and within 6 months you're going to need a new joint replacement anyway?
Well, like I said, we're seeing fewer people have that recommendation, but there are still some who want to try it because they feel that the idea of having a joint replacement is more radical than they want to go. They think that if there's an interim procedure, they should try it. They are told that it's a brief procedure, that it's a quick rehab. But a lot of them are disappointed in the end. And the fact that you are doing something to that joint surgically is not necessarily going to slow things down. It may actually accelerate by putting more inflammation in the area. On the plus side, if they do the rehabilitation, that means they're going to be doing some exercises for the musculature in the area, which can never hurt unless it's done incorrectly and aggravates the joint. But we always want people to be stronger going into surgery, going into total joint replacement. Most people are taught an exercise program in advance when possible. So it's not necessarily a terrible thing, but it's certainly not anything to offer people as an alternative or a way to prolong the joint replacement.
Again, I'm only speaking for myself, not for any medical profession, but some of these treatments delay the inevitability up to about 3.5 years. Depending upon some of the circumstances.
You're talking about injection versus arthroscopy.
Exactly.
Injection may create a joint that's less painful. It may give the person less difficulty in function. Not everyone, but there are a couple of alternatives, and people are willing to try injection pretty readily in order to prolong the surgery. If they can wait and have an injection every year or two, then obviously they want to do that. But again, it's not going to reverse time. It may slow down the advancement of the pain, but it's not going to restore their joint in any meaningful way.
Yeah, what we call pathology, which means the negative body deterioration that occurs anyway, that continues on. It's not reversed. There are several injections. I don't think we're going to spend this half hour going into all of them, but they have anti-inflammatory properties and lubricating properties, and they can be beneficial, but they're not a panacea. However, if you're on a time schedule, let's say you're in some special sports event and you just have to stay at peak level for another 6 months, that might be the solution for you as long as you're going to decrease your expectations afterwards. So it's very individual. And I would also throw out for the public that the response to these medications is very variable and independent and individual. So whereas the same injection that works on me might not really bring you the benefit you need.
That's true.
About how long, and I know there's variation here again, about how long does it take to properly rehab someone from your perspective as a physical therapist after they've had a total knee?
It's going to be a process that's going to take several months. On average, patients are coming to physical therapists in an outpatient setting sooner than they used to. There is less likelihood that the patient will go to a rehabilitation facility versus going home after surgery. They may have a few home visits, depending on their situation at home. But in general, they're coming to outpatient sooner, so they're kind of staying with us a little bit longer in the long range, but the total time is still probably about 3 to 6 months on average of recovery time. And it's variable in the sense that some people start off with a little more disability than others, but by the time they regain their range of motion and strength and their gait returns to normal, you're looking at several months' time.
Being on the receiving end of these patients after surgery, what ballpark percent or idea do you have? How many people have one knee replaced with the idea that down the road they might have a second, or have them both done at the same time?
They don't generally have them done at exactly the same time. Usually there's a 2-week lag between the two. If they do have them both done, most places will not operate on both knees in the same surgery. But a large number of them have a second knee done in the long range.
Within a couple weeks or shortly after that.
Or sometimes years after, but
right.
But a lot of people have fairly significant deterioration in both joints.
Now, do people get partial knee replacements versus entire articular cartilage replacement? Discuss that a little bit.
That does happen. It's not super common. It was thought to be something you'd see more commonly in younger people who were going to go on and maybe later on need something else done. It's been successful in some people. It's not something we see a whole lot of, but it's out there.
What are we talking about when we're talking partial knee reconstruction?
It's almost like a cap on a tooth. It's a partial covering of the surfaces, one of the condyles.
So that, for the sake of the audience, condyle means one of the surfaces, and there's several of them. So just a portion of the bone that's
right.
affected. It might also be prudent if there was some injury specifically to one condyle or something like that.
Sometimes people do have specific lesions in the cartilage, and there are a number of ways that those are being addressed now that weren't available previously. So you'll see some different approaches.
Now, when total knee replacements are done, it's usually some pre-designed, pre-sized model that comes off the shelf, and there's a host of different companies. I don't even know how many there are, but there's at least a half a dozen that produce some form of what they believe to be the best product out there. In so doing, they have set sizes. The only way to compare it to people is like shoe sizes. They don't have an unlimited variety of sizes. There could be up to a dozen different models that could be used. And that's one approach. A newer approach that's starting to create a little bit of a buzz and interest is getting a custom knee, where basically you go in and your body's measured up and you get 3D CAT scans, and now actually using 3D printers to print out some of the components and some of the instruments used. And it's specific for your knee and your knee only. So once it's done on you, all those measurements and all those instruments and everything will not work on someone else. It's kind of new, and we'll get into that in one of our shows. But I'm putting you on the spot here, and I don't ask you to name anyone, but do you see different variations depending upon the company or brand that's used? And also, I'm going to ask you the same question about the surgeon that does the work. And I know also the degree of physical therapy shortly after and following after, probably the results can vary quite a bit on those three factors. Am I hitting anything accurate there?
The only thing that I could tell you regarding those sorts of issues is that occasionally we see a patient come back from a total knee replacement with stiffness that's kind of inexplicable. Some people just seem to be very, very stiff. And out of that group, once in a while, you'll get somebody who'll come back and say, oh, they think they put the wrong size in. Stiffness, you can see in patients, though, that have the exact same prosthesis done by the same doctor in both legs, and one's stiff and one isn't. So there are other issues. But we're interested to see, going forward, how different some of these custom joints are going to be. You know, are they going to perform better? Will there be more ease of motion earlier? But I don't have enough evidence to answer that yet.
What are some of the complications for someone that's considering the surgery?
Complications mainly have to do with pre-existing problems, pre-existing weaknesses, weight problems, loss of range of motion, poor gait, and persistent pain, which may be related to some other pain generator or from some habitual gait deviation or other problems. Occasionally, you will see somebody develop an infection, which is probably the most dangerous complication. Occasionally, you will see people who just don't seem to want to weight bear on the joint, don't want to move it. Excessive swelling, pain will kind of prevent that person from progressing. Other than that, they're pretty reliable.
Good. Have you treated any, or do you personally know of any patients that have gone on to have an extensive athletic career after having had one of these total knee replacements?
We have a lot of patients who return to their sports. Primarily, I've seen them in horseback riding. I've seen them in golf, occasionally tennis. Those are the main sports we see them in, but skiing as well. Very commonly, people want to continue to play or ski or do their prior activity, and that's one of their motivators, so they get back and do it.
Well, if anyone's interested in following up with some other interesting stories related to this, they could Google Gary Stevens, a jockey that played in Seabiscuit, and he was out of commission for quite a while with an arthritic knee that he had multiple injections and all sorts of attempts to straighten him out, but over time the knee got infected and he needed to have a total knee replacement. Love to be able to interview him about that subject, but he did get back in the saddle and ride again, although I don't know that he's been as successful and has to be a little bit more careful. Anyway, I want to recognize today's special guest, physical therapist Rachel Meyer, and encourage our listeners who have greater interest in the show or previous shows to visit our website, www.oneononestories.com, or email me via info@oneononestories.com with any questions, comments, suggestions for future shows, recommendations for guests or topics. Again, Rachel, our sincere thanks for sharing with us your time, expertise, and personal story.
Thank you, Dr. Barroza.